Hey everyone, I'm Kari.
Hello everyone, I am Brie.
And this is CSI Talk. Hello everyone, welcome back. One of the week of another episode of CSI Talk to Cry. Before we get into today's episode, just want to let y'all know that this is a safe space for you. This is always going to be a safe space. Today was a long day. You guys wouldn't believe it. It was just, it's so unbelievably long. But, well, I'm really looking forward to doing this episode for you guys. So, I'm sorry if I sound tired, but still wanted to do this one day for you guys. Also, CSI is on. I just turned on the exam and CSI was on, and just in its own that episode in which DB's daughter gets kidnapped. And I'm like, wow, DB really suffered, right? Because his daughter got kidnapped and his granddaughter got kidnapped. So, like, that man really went through it.
And special announcement.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I don't know. Okay, like, this is for, I'm not sure about the other countries, but this is for the, apparently this is for the U.S. So this was on the CSI page. This is for the U.S. I'm not sure about the other countries. I'm not sure. We were asked a while ago when was CSI Vegas going to arrive on South America. I don't even know. I don't know. I'm from South America, and I don't know because we don't know. We don't know which broadcaster company is going to get the rights to a CSI or not, because it's a bit complicated here. Because apparently the company that got the rights to CSI Crime Scene Investigation or the spinoffs as well, it's not Paramount Plus. It's not a streaming platform. But the broadcasting company here is AXN, which also broadcasts Criminal Marines. But as we all know, Criminal Marines here on South America, at least, it's on Star Plus. So I actually don't know if CSI is going to be on Paramount Plus here, or it's going to be on another streaming platform, or if it's going to be with Star Plus or not. And I've been trying to reach out to these broadcasting companies to know if they have any idea or if they think about bringing CSI Vegas here, but we haven't had any. But they were quick to bring Criminal Minds to South America, Criminal Minds Evolution, as in Criminal Minds Evolution. So we don't really know, right? We know that Europe is broadcasting CSI Vegas, but not sure about the other continents as well. Oh, we got another special announcement coming. So it actually, in 2 weeks, it's our 100th episode. So we are going to be covering this one special episode that we've always said that we were going to cover. We've been saying this for 2 months now. We haven't covered. Yeah, we've been saying, yeah, this happened every single time we've been mentioned this episode. We're like, or something that happened on that episode. We're like, oh yeah, we're going to cover that episode one day. But just you wait. But no, your time has come. The girlies there loved this movies, TV movie, Please Rise. We are going to be covering for our episode 99 and 100th, Grave Danger. It's going to have to be a two-parter because obviously the episode is still early and we're not going to be able to cover everything up in just one single episode. But it's going to be a two-parter event. So we're going to be covering Grave Danger Part 1 and 2.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and since I have the DVDs, I might be telling some behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, Brie knows a bit about the behind the scenes stuffs that I actually did not know, because it's a fact, when I saw this episode, really, I was surprised because the length of the episode was more than 20 minutes. And I was like, is this really CSI?
Back TV, before went to USA, and now on Iron Mystery, reruns on Pluto TV. Today, we are talking about the season 2, episode 2.
Actually, as you guys remember this episode, this episode is kind of, it's funny the way they try to solve it. It's really fun to try to solve it, and the way that Grissom explains it, it's really good. Okay, so the official synopsis of the episode is, the CSI team suspects foul play when WMLVU students Paige Rykov vanish into thin air. The team soon discovers that she had an affair with a married professor, along with a lot of other seemingly unrelated events. When her body is found in a trash heap, the team has to find out what led to her death. Okay, so it's just one case, and everyone is on the team. Okay, so we all remember the first scene is pouring rain. I remember when I was watching this episode the first time, I'm like, this girl must be really depressed, right? Because literally me going to Georgia University on my first year, because I was so depressed on my first year of university. And if you are on your first year of university and you feel like you don't fit in, and you feel like you're the only one, honey, I can assure you that you're not the only one. Not that I'm trying to diminish your pain. It's just everybody feels like they don't belong.
I had a mental breakdown after a couple of quarters, and I haven't been back.
I had a mental breakdown, but I couldn't. I wanted to quit.
But then weeks of being better from my mental breakdown.
Well.
And then I got a job.
We see her staring out of her dark room into the rain. And we see a packed suitcase. In an unmade bed. The room is completely empty. There is no way. If you walked into the room, you wouldn't be able to know that that room was hers. So she gets a call telling her that her cab is waiting for her downstairs. 4 days later, Grissom's on the scene. Okay, now 4 days later is already too late to call for help, to call for the police. What?
It's because they didn't know, because she had a ticket, plane ticket that was for home in Boulder, Colorado. But she never arrived.
Yeah, kids are like this are way too common. So if you know of someone that went missing and you feel like something's wrong, you don't have to wait for them to be missing for 2 days or 4 days. You can still call the cops. If you want to.
In the U.S., the general rule of thumb is 24 hours for dogs.
Well, I know it's the general rule, but I've seen a lot of interviews with investigators and detectives and cops from the documentaries, and they all say that all of the cases, time is sensitive, but if someone that you know has gone missing and you feel like it's a danger, it's really dangerous, you have to go to them and tell them it's missing, especially if it's a child. If it's a child, they'll act right away.
Yes.
And they won't wait around.
That's because one time that it happened, the case behind Amber, why we call the brother, because everybody, even people even witnessed the kidnapping, but the cops didn't act fast enough, and the kid ended up dead.
Grissom arrives at the scene, and he is told that Paige was going to drop out of school and go home to Colorado, but she is missing now. Her purse and her suitcase were still inside her room. She never took the cab that she actually called. And Grissom notes that after 24 hours, missing person's case becomes really hard to solve. And that is true. There's a lot of missing persons cases out there, and time is of the essence when it comes to missing persons. So I'd say that if someone that you know is missing for 24 hours or less than 24 hours, you go to the cops and you tell them what happened. You don't wait for 48 hours because time is of the essence. When he gets into the room, he realizes that there's no sign of struggle. Even the lamp is still on. Nothing seems to be wrong. So Grayson was like, if she was taken, she got out of the room, out of her own accord. She wasn't forced to get out of the room. She could have gone back into her room if she wanted to grab her suitcase. And he starts to go through the room. Grissom does whatever Grissom does, which is taste the freaking evidence, right? I just know that man tasted human decom just for the hell of it. I just know that one day he did it. Just so he can be able to say that he did it. So he saw something on the wall and he decided to taste it. Okay. He is like, oh, it tastes like mint. And Sarah's like, oh, she probably used toothpaste to patch the holes in the wall to get her security deposit back, because technically she rented the room. And so to get her deposit back, she has to hint the room exactly how she got it.
And they use treatment for toothpaste.
There are two beds in the room, and Sarah says that her roommate, Jennifer Riggs, left the university just 2 weeks into the semester. So something happened. Like, I mean, not necessarily a lot of people leave university 2 weeks into the semester. It's not unheard of. But they become suspicious because the two girls decide to get out of university one after the other in just a short space of time. The CSI, they find a void in the middle of the room and they're like, oh, they could have been from a rug. And Sarah is like, okay, maybe someone used it to wrap her body up to dispose it. And when she is going through the room herself, she found blood and semen on one of the beds. It would turn out that the blood did not belong to Paige. It belonged to her roommate. Although the CSIs are investigating just one case, they ended up finding another victim for another crime. They solved the crime along with Paige's crimes. The building has 8 floors, and it only has 4 cameras per floor, so I mean, it already has a lot more security than the whole CSLA. I can't assure you. If you know, it has a lot more security than the whole CSLA. Nick, he goes to the security office and he looks over the surveillance video with the tag. And then when he goes back through the night of Paige's disappearance, they have to sit down and look through hours and hours of footage. It sounds really boring when you say it like that.
And this is Chico before he became Archie.
Yeah. They find someone covering the camera that was actually on the hallway on pages 4. When they zoomed in, they actually see someone using their hands as leverage to prop themselves up. And he's like, oh, I can get a fingerprint from it. And that's exactly what he does. He goes back to the scene to get the fingerprint. Meanwhile, Catherine, she's like, oh, let me go and search the trash chutes on pages 4. If you don't know, maybe you don't, cannot imagine what it is, but if you don't know, it's kind of like literally a tunnel inside the wall, but only trash goes inside of it. She finds a red stain. She thinks it's blood, but it's not. It's just pizza sauce, but there's nothing in it. But it's actually a small Easter egg. It's a small Easter egg because she actually ends it up on the same place that their whole investigation would end up. And Paige's parents, they go and confront Grissom because they want to know where her daughter is. And they're like, is there enough people working on this case? And he's like, ma'am, I'm just trying to do my job. Let me do my job. You know what? I keep remembering about that episode and he's just complaining. People keep giving me papers and I'm just trying to do my job. He said that the only thing that connects their daughter to his team is the evidence that their main job was to interpret whatever the evidence was trying to tell them. Which is a bit insensible from his part, because these people, they want to find out what happened to their daughter. And that seems highly insensible, Grissom. This is what Catherine meant when she said in the season finale of season one that Grissom needed to be a lot more political than he was. I don't know if you guys remember the season finale of season one. It was from the strip of Stranglers. Catherine told Grissom that he needed to learn to be more political. And he needed to also learn how to deal with the victim's family, not to say, you need to give me space to stay. Okay, Grissom. So back in the lab, Grissom is looking at the camera footage and he finds someone carrying something rolled up and he thinks there might be a body inside of it. Nick identifies the handprint that he collected, and it comes back to Harry McFadden. And when he's brought into questioning, he said that he and his fraternity brothers, they covered up the camera and they quote-unquote borrowed furniture from the student lounge as a prank. How is that a prank, dude? Nobody's laughing. He said that the fourth floor was targeted because it has all the primo goods and fewer stairs to climb down than the fifth and seventh floor. When he's asked about Paige, he says that they dated once or twice, but she broke up with him because she was seeing someone more mature. And they couldn't hold him down, so they needed to let him go. But it gives them information, so now they know that Paige was seeing someone. Well, Nate and Catherine, they watched the security footage again, but this time from the dorm parking lot. And they see that the frat boys actually literally put the quote-unquote bar furniture into their car. And they see the cab arriving and literally waiting for 13 minutes before driving away. And the DNA they got from Paige's toothbrush, she's not a match to the blood they found on the mattress on the dorm room. And the blood also contains, the name of the drug is Rohypnol. Rohypnol is a date rape drug. Basically, a perpetrator will put this drug inside a drink that his victim is drinking. And that will make the victim really sleepy and fuzzy, and they won't have any control over their body. The thing is, this drug was originally used for surgeries. And was used for anesthesia. And it's really bad because now you can buy it over the counter. You can buy it over the counter. I just literally just Google it and just the name and the first thing that popped up. You can buy it over the counter for less than $30. Amazing how some people would see that as an opportunity to just buy this thing, to just take advantage of someone. But that's why you should never leave your cup unattended if you go out to clubs or out with people that you don't know, you do not leave your cup unattended. If you turn around and you lose your cup is out of your size. Do not drink it from it ever again. Okay? Because there is someone with evil intentions might have put something inside your cup. So the vaginal contribution from the semen is also a match to the blood. So now the CSIs, they have a missing case, but they also have a rape case. And the victim is not Paige. It's someone else's. Probably the roommates, right? So Grissom, Sarah, and Brass, they go and speak to Jennifer Riggs, who was Paige's roommate. And I love how everyone shows up. And Sarah is the last one to arrive. And Brass is like, oh, we were just waiting for you. And she's like, yeah, you were waiting for a woman. And that's exactly what happened. They were waiting for a woman.
At least they didn't deny it.
Yeah. I mean, if I was Jennifer, I would feel a lot more comfortable talking with Sarah than I would be talking with Brass or Grissom about what happened. Or even if I had to talk to Grissom and Brass in the room, I would be a lot more comfortable if Sarah was there too. Jennifer does says that she left school because she was sexually assaulted by someone after a floor party, but she cannot remember who did it because it is a side effect from the day rape drug. Because she lived in someone that attacked her, like, she couldn't feel safe to live as in place as this person. So she felt like the best thing for her was to leave school because she could never know who attacked her. Which is unfortunately the case for a lot of women out there. And I am so very sorry for everything that all those women have to go through. I feel your pain as a woman.
It's only about her, it's not about anything else.
The human pain as a woman, because I certainly do know how it feels like to not have complete autonomy over your body. But I certainly do understand your pain. I am so incredibly sorry for what you've been through. And I was just reading an article that said that women constitute most of the public of shows as CSI, Law and Order, and, you know, those crime shows. The fan base are mostly comprised of women, not only because we love this show, but because we identify with the victims, and also we learn how to defend ourselves, and we learn how and what to do in case we are ever faced with a situation like that. Because I'm sure we all learned something with CSI that we've used in real life, right? But Grissom, Sarah, and Warwick, they go back to the dorm. They all know that a rapist wouldn't give his DNA. But they all know that a rapist would give his DNA if it would help find Paige, because as far as everyone knew, Paige's disappearance never had anything to do with whatever happened to Jennifer, because at this point, nobody knew what happened to Jennifer. As far as they know, Jennifer dropped out. As long as everyone participated voluntarily, CSIs can actually use the DNA however they like, which is true. Grissom's like, oh, if somebody refused, they actually have a suspect. Sarah and Warwick, they collect DNA from all the males, and they go back to the lab, and they find a positive match. It is a baseball player called Kevin Watson, who lives down the hall from Paige. When he's brought into questioning, not brought into questioning, when they actually have to go and question this guy, Kevin, he has the nerve to say that he never actually involves himself with either girl, But the CSI literally have evidence that he sexually assaulted Jailer Shrek. So he was placed under arrest for rape. But he was on a road trip when Paige disappeared. So it's the CSI's on a dead end. And time is running out. And since time is running out, it means that the likelihood of finding Paige alive is also really small. Catherine and Nick, they are on security footage duty. They're still watching footage from the parking lot, and they notice that there is the same car circling the parking lot six times in just 20 minutes. The car was not even looking for a parking space. It was just doing it. So when they zoom in, they see the car had a parking permit from the university, and the car is registered to Robert Woodbury, who was a philosopher professor at the university. And when his car is searched, they actually find a blanket covering something up. But it's just a bag of golf clubs. I love how they build up this mystery. They're like, oh, we're going to find your body, and then that lifts it up, and there's nothing there. So Grissom's like, oh, just bring it to the lab and process it. But Catherine and Grissom and Brass, they go and question the professor and says that, yeah, she was my student. And Grissom is like, that's interesting. And he finds a piece of pottery on the floor. And he's like, oh, that must have been a struggle. So Grissom literally tells him, why were you in the parking lot during why were you in the parking lot when Paige disappeared? And the professor is literally silent, is like answering that. And then he's like, I'm a married man. Okay, these people are trying to solve a missing case. What is your problem?
What is you being married relation?
Yeah, but he said that he was having an affair with Paige. He was having an affair with Paige, but even though he was married. And he went to her room to talk to her before she left. But he says that she never came down to talk to him. As she should, actually. He wasn't worth it. But back in the lab, Nick is processing the car, and he finds hair matching Paige's, and the hair still has skin tags, which means that they were ripped from the roots. It could mean a struggle or not. So now they have a reason to bring the good professor to questioning. So they bring him to questioning. And he says, oh, but she was never in my car. And the hair might be transferred from my sweater. But they were ripped out from the roots. How is that transfer?
The person did not know what that meant.
And he said that there was a 4-minute call from his home to Paige's dorm room. He said that he only ever used his cell phone to talk to Paige. And I'm like, my dude, at this point, you have to know that your wife knows about your affair. Like, you have to know.
Dumb guy. Think they're the most intelligent in the room. They think they can pull the wool over everybody.
The call was made on the day of Paige's disappearance, and it lasted for 4 minutes on the afternoon. And the good professor has an alibi. He was actually at a faculty lunch at the time. When he is questioned about his wife, he's like, oh my gosh, she was at home. Okay, what are you supposed to do now? I mean, now we're supposed to react like you do to a professor? I don't know, dude. Like, I've been a student at university for a while now. Some teachers, they were actually really smart, okay? But some of them, I mean, most of them are men, okay? Most of them are men. Most of the professors at university, I mean, it is dominated by men. but they be thinking that they're there's Mars ever. And they also have a lot of sexism. It rolls out of them. It just stinks so much. His wife, Sharon Woodbury, she confirms that she does share the car with her husband. But she's like, yeah, but I can't remember the day she stayed disappeared. It was so long ago. But then she does know that her husband had multiple therapy students. I mean, that was really a blow to his brain, right? He really thought he was doing something. She told Paige for a ride and told her about the quote-unquote sex of life. I'm sorry, but it's a grown woman. Took me for a ride in her car and told me about the sex of life. I wouldn't take her seriously. I just wouldn't. I mean, that sounds really desperate. I understand you love your husband, but he has cheated on you multiple times, lady. Why are you talking to me about the fact of life? Well, during the conversation, Paige really said that the relationship was over and she was moving back home. And Sharon really says that she never got physical with Paige, saying that Paige's hair actually got caught up in the headrest when she tried to leave the car. Gerson got a call from work and came into work at a garbage facility where a homeless man was searching for a hidden treasure, but he actually found the body. And it's actually, look, we're seeing some disgusting things on CSI. We're seeing like how they found bodies on this show. Finding a body on a trash compactor on season two. Okay. They found Paige's body and it was crushed post-mortem. And the yellow t-shirt around her wound indicated that blood wasn't flowing at the time, which means that she was already dead when the body was crushed. And her death was caused by a ruptured spleen, caused by a blunt force trauma to her ribcage. But Dr. Robbins he really cannot tell which weapon was used. And says that the CSI may never know actually what happened because her body was really twisted and he cannot really tell what happened. The team goes back to the dumpster outside Paige's room. And Warwick, this time, he does find some blood inside the dumpster. And Nick finds trash paint transfer on the outside. And it is the same color as the transfer on the dumpster. The team thinks that they are looking for a hit and run. It would also explain the blunt force trauma, the height of the transfer is weak. It's kind of equal to Paige's abdomen. She was standing, the cord hit the dumpster, and the dumpster hits Paige on her abdomen. The theory is that the driver tosses Paige's body into the dumpster to hide his crime. So Sharon becomes a suspect, but the black paint chips doesn't match her car. The blood analysis confirmed that the blood did belong to Paige's. So Nick is analyzing the transfer and he finds out that it's actually there's a lot of layers. Like, we're talking about layers here. And the car was actually painted white.
Talking like an onion.
Yeah. Like, we're peeling back the layers, the onion. Like, we're peeling everything back. It was actually white, but then it was red, and then it was black. Okay, I love the superimpose of colors. The paints are fracture stored and belong to a 1989 or 1990 Jeep. It belongs to a Jeep.
Cherokee.
Grissom is called to the interrogation room where Mark Doyle, who is expecting father, he is talking to Brett. He says that his wife, who is 9 months pregnant, beeped him. So to bypass traffic, he cut through the alleyway outside Paige's dorm, sideswiping the dumpster in the process. So the CSIs are processing Mark's car, and they find no evidence that he hit Paige. Grissom suggests that the solution is, in quote-unquote, needs plausible and wrong. But it is messy, unlikely, and right. And everybody's looking at him like head empty, no thoughts. I love that because everybody's like, it's on their coveralls looking for any type of evidence on this expecting father's car, and they're finding nothing. And Grissom is like, okay, stay with me for a moment. Follow me here. And he is trying to put out this evidence. A group of people, you know, they are tired, okay? They're just trying to find a solution. And they're looking at him, and Grissom is just trying to come up with a theory about what happened. And they're like, had empty no thoughts. He says that it is actually chaos theory. And he's like, maybe we're just looking at a sequence of random events. So Paige was in her dorm room and then ended up behind the dumpster. But Grissom believes that the answer is somewhere between those two points. Grissom and Sarah, they go back to Paige's dorm and they recreate the evening of her disappearance, which is fairly common. Investigators will recreate the event of any crime. Sarah, she thinks that Paige saw the cab waiting for her. She grabbed her suitcase, but Grissom is like, but the suitcase is still in the room. They were like, oh, Paige must have been cleaning all day because she wanted her deposit back. Everything in the room as it is as it should be, but the trash can is missing. Amazing how they did not notice that the trash can was missing. And if you look back in the episode, in the first scene, you can see that when Paige is in her room, you can actually see the trash can. But when Grissom walks into the room, the trash can is nowhere to be found. So Sarah is like, oh, the last thing you do when you're cleaning is take out the trash. Okay. So Sarah, she dumps some trash down the chute, and she is actually surprised about how quickly the door snaps back. And we already knew that the door snaps really quickly because that happened to Catherine and Warwick when they were inspecting that very chute in the beginning of the episode. And Grissom is like, well, maybe she wasn't quick enough and accidentally dumped her trash can down the chute. Down the alleyway, Grissom brings everyone up to speed, tells everyone what he and Sarah just found out. He said Paige came down to bring the trash can back. But how did she end up near the dumpster? Well, there's no way into the dumpster. Catherine is like, well, she climbed on the back of it between the dumpster and the wall to try and grab the trash can back. But in doing so, she pushed the dumpster into the alleyway at the same time that Mark was driving by. And he hit the dumpster, and then the dumpster hit Paige, which ruptured her spleen, and she fell into the garbage and bled out. And those poor parents, when Grissom tells her, I thought I was trying to get her deposit back. And when she was going to retrieve the trash can, a car went by, hit a dumpster, and the dumpster hit her, and her spleen was ruptured, and she starts to bleed, so she bled to death, and then we found her body later. But they're like, no, somebody was responsible. She was definitely murdered. So they decide they're going to hire a private investigator because they won't rest until every question is answered. Catherine is like, well, they didn't get the closure that they wanted. And Grissom's like, well, but the truth should bring them closure. But Catherine's like, well, that's not always the case. And she's right, actually. I mean, truth won't always bring you closure. I mean, it won't, actually. Okay, so on this week's episode, we've seen that there's, like, two girls that decided to university because of situations that were out of her hands. Like, one was sexually assaulted by someone who literally lives down the hall from her, and the other was because she was having an affair with her professor, who was having an affair with a lot of his students. Well, the first year of trying to accept something is really hard. And I think we've all been there. I mean, it's the year that you actually adapt to something. And it's not supposed to be easy. But if you hang in there, I'm sure it's going to be good. I'm trying to end this episode on a high note, though. Because your girl is kind of tired today. On my first year of university, I did not feel like I belonged. Actually, I did not feel like I belonged because I could see that everybody absolutely loved what they were doing, what they were saying, but I didn't feel that. I felt like I was the odd one out because I did not feel remotely inspired or loved what I was studying. I did not feel any of that. I mean, it's kind of tradition here in the country to go to university after high school. I know that a lot of countries, they don't have this tradition to go to university after you graduate from high school, but it's a big deal here, so I had to go.
It's middle here.
And look, I remember, like, telling my friend recently, like, I got to university with just anxiety, and then left to university with anxiety and depression. It's because it can be really hard. You don't have to be so hard on yourself, because sometimes we set up standards that are so high. You feel like you don't fit in because you're not necessarily loving what you're studying because of your first year. And everybody's telling you to just suck it up because it's going to get better. Or because people are telling you the university is supposed to be the best years of your life, and you're feeling bad because they're not being the best years of your life. You know how to feel bad because they're not the best years of your life? My university was not the best years of my life. Like, for heaven's sakes, I had to take university during COVID. They don't have to be the best years of your life. And you don't have that obligation over you. But now, if you feel like it's not the right thing to do right now, if you feel like it's not for you, or you need a break, absolutely, absolutely, take that break. Take that break. Give time for yourself, because
your mental health is more important.
Your mental health is more important than your grades. Like, grades are very important, but in the end, like, there won't be any grades without your brain, trust me. So next week, we're going to be talking about an episode in which is an introduction of a very beloved character, is Labes of Las Vegas. Yeah, that's right.
Really?
The infamous Lady Heather Kessler. She's gonna make her debut on CSI. She makes her debut on CSI on the episode, on episode 8, season 2, Slaves of Las Vegas. There's a lot to talk about on that episode. Well, but I love you guys so much. Thank you so much for listening.
But if you're anyone in America, try to stay out of the, if you're able to, try to stay out of the Wild House. Because Wild House, I think, is almost every state right now. You can't, remember, don't open your doors if you can help it. If you need, there is in the wild smoke, if you're in the area of the wild, because, like, just in the past week, my state had, like, 5 wild.
Guys, keep safe, please. Be safe out there, guys. We love you. Bye.
Bye.